Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze. On today's show, we're continuing the discussion about creating new cheeses. We spoke with Margot Brooks of Sugar House Creamery, Jos Volto of Volto Creamery, and Benton Brown and Sam Frank of Crown Finish Caves, all cheesemakers or affiners here in New York. And we spoke with Maisie and Matthew of Jacobs and Bridgeford Farmstead Cheese in Indiana most recently. This week, I'm very excited to have Piero Guerini of Dolce Valle Dairy on the line with us today. Thanks so much for coming on, Piero. Piero has a really unique story and a really unique creamery. I first heard about Dolce Valle in a Culture magazine article a few years ago, and it really stuck with me since then because his story is like the stuff that novels are written about. Piero is originally from Italy, but now resides in Trinidad, where his Dolce Valle Dairy is located. You also own a hotel there, if I'm not mistaken, Piero. Is that correct? I'll let you elaborate on that in a moment. I read that the area where your milk comes from is best known for nesting leatherback turtles, and that seems very surreal and amazing. So if you're still with me, which I hope you are, I'd like to start off by asking you, what's your story and how did you get into the cheese business? You back with me, brother?
Hello, Greg.
Hey, Piero. How are you, bro?
Very well. nice to talk to you. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's nice to talk with you, too. I just introduced you here on the show. We had a little tiny bit of technical difficulties, but that is no worries. I told our guests, our listeners, just a little bit about your story and about your creamery. So I was hoping that you could explain to us what your story is and how you got into the cheese business and how you fell in love with Trinidad and wanted to make food there or make a different life for yourself there.
Okay. I used to be a photojournalist. I used to live in New York. I used to do international assignment for a news magazine, Time, Life, Newsweek, among the others, and many others. And I moved to Trinidad 21 years ago. I found a beautiful little hotel on the beach, and I decided to come and start a new life. And one of my dreams was always to be able to produce healthy and what I call ethical food. And in high school, one of my best friends belonged to a family of cheesemakers. They have been doing traditional mozzarella for the last four generations. And during the summer, I was working with them as a delivery person, not as a cheesemaker. But me and Massimo, that's his name, of my friend, we always dream to do cheese together one day, to open a business together. And all things came together when we discovered that Trinidad has a very high number of buffalo, or water buffalo.
Right.
The same buffalo, obviously, that I use in Italy to make the famous buffalo mozzarella.
Right.
So we start to play with the idea of making mozzarella here. And about 4 years ago, we put down a business plan. We found a local investor, and we purchased quite sophisticated equipment from Italy. And we started about 2.5 years ago.
You right? start,
but yeah, go ahead.
No, please continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what we discovered was that the availability of buffalo milk is not great in the island. So since we invested so much money in this machine, we started to do cow milk. And that has been our main line of cheese for the last 2 years here in Trinidad. Okay, so Trinidad is my new home, but also Trinidad is an excellent base for then do distribution in the CARICOM, the Caribbean Common Market, because there are no duty between the islands. And the other islands that are much more geared toward high-end tourism has a big demand of this kind of
Oh, did I lose you again? Well, that's okay. It sounds like my
no
man.
Problem.
Oh, you're back. So it's interesting because I know that you came. You said as a photojournalist, and I wanted to ask you a question, but I'll ask it to you in a second. So you came and you saw that the island was populated with water buffalo, and that intrigued you because you wanted to make cheeses like the mozzarella di bufala in Campania. Is that correct? Mad technical difficulties. The island's not kind to me in terms of cell phone service. but you still haven't been able to produce any buffalo milk cheese yet, right? You're still working with cow's milk? Yeah. We're going to have to take a little bit of a break, and then we're going to try to get Piero back on the line because he's got a really great story, and we really, really want to tell it. So just bear with us for just a second, and we'll be right back. Cheers.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hi there, this is Greg Blaze. We're back around Heritage Radio with Cutting the Curd, talking to Piero Guerini. Hopefully his cell phone connection's a little bit better now. Are you out there, Piero?
Yeah.
Hey, it's nice to hear from you.
The connection sounds a little bit better.
Oh,
thank
that's
you
great.
To get back to me.
Oh, man, of course. We want to talk to you. So, like I was saying, you have a really unique story and a really interesting story. So you were a photojournalist that fell in love with Trinidad. You came there and sort of never left, correct? And I was wondering. I was wondering a question that I wanted to ask you before I got into the type of cheeses you make and the things that you do was how did you draw on your experience as a photojournalist, or did any of your experiences, particular experiences, inspire you to want to work with food and specifically cheese through the lens of being in Trinidad?
No, I think that it comes more from my. Young years, I grew up in a farm in Italy. My grandparents, they were farmers. We used to have cows. I used to drive tractor and take care of the cow when I was 5 or 6 years old on my summer vacation. And I guess I always dreamed to be able to live in a similar setting. And the destiny brought me.
Well, look, it's unfortunate, but we're going to have to try to get you back sometime when you get it on a landline there. I'm really sorry, but you got a little teaser of Piero Guerini, and we will get back to talk to him, I promise, about his dairy, the Dolce Valle Creamery, where he makes amazing Italian cheeses in Trinidad, the place where whenever I'm stressed out in New York, one of the reasons why I want to do this show is because I'm always like, I'd like to go down to an island where I can make cheese, but not have to, take the L train when it's broken and a bunch of snow. So hopefully we'll be able to get back to Trinidad. But luckily for me, because this is Roberta's Pizza in Brooklyn and people just flock here of all sorts of background and quality, I was able to pull a friend of mine right out of the pizzeria who has been on the show before, who is a cheesemonger of some renown. He's Nate McElroy. So, Nate, sorry to take you away from your pizza, but what's going on? And then we have Ella Marie Cronin in the booth as well. She's been instructed to hang out and talk to us. I never met Ellen. Ellen is also a cheesemonger. So we're just going to talk for a little bit about some stuff, maybe catch up with Nate for a minute and ask him his thoughts about maybe making cheese in a different setting, like down in Trinidad and Tobago. Or
sign
down
me
in
up. Sign me up. Get me out of this winter.
Absolutely. It's Nate is the capo over at the Bedford Cheese Shop in Manhattan, and those guys have certainly. I think Nate's about recovered from the holidays, but the winter keeps dragging along. How you doing, and how are things over there?
The shop's great. The body is tired still.
Yeah.
The joints are definitely feeling the. Oh man, it's got to stop.
What's
got to
stop?
The winter has got to stop.
Yes, it does.
It's cold, but no, things are great. Things are great. The shops are doing well. The cheese is coming in. Spring's around the corner where. We're going to start getting all that nice fresh stuff in and, get all the goat cheeses and get to sell the stuff that really the beauty of living in this town is really seeing the bounty of the seasons as it you get out of the dire, dark months of winter and everything comes into bloom and you know, and you get to really handle all the good stuff. So,
yeah. I found that I had and I don't know what your opinions are. I found that I actually had a fairly good supply of everything through the winter this year. There have been some years, and this is despite all of the sort of litigious nature of our business that's like sort of been definitely a thread that has run through the show and through our lives, our day-to-day lives. I felt that in the end, no matter what people told us we weren't going to be able to get, and no matter, you know, all of the stomping on our orders that the FDA did, and all of our, you know, all of the just the cumulative drama and need for, you know, for dealing with things other than just selling cheese, we came through it pretty well. I sold a ton of cheese over this, and I still have over this winter. Has it been the same for you and your shop?
Yeah, supply's been great. I mean, you know, and just the variation. But really, what's exciting about going through, you know, regardless of having like fresher goat cheeses in the winter that you can develop, but going into the spring and just tasting the changes of the milk flavors and you know, and seeing how all the animals are out on the pasture and all that. That's what's exciting to me. So, yeah, the supply has been great, regardless of you know, the red tape that's been put up around things.
What are you getting in now? I find still if you're going to get younger cheeses made with sheep and goat's milk right now, they're still a little bit salty, and mm-hmm. I don't trust that the things that are made of goat's milk are actually made of goat's milk yet.
Right.
Or you know they're kind of cut. I just did a class at Eataly where I was doing a regional specialties, and we did northern Italian cheeses, and I had beautiful Robbiola Roccaverano, DOP, raw milk Robbiola Roccaverano, which I cling to. I don't know how I get it, but I'm really happy that I do, you know. And the interesting comments I got from the paying customers were, you know, I hate goat cheese, but this isn't as bitter as goat cheese. And like in the back of my mind, I'm like, that's because it's probably not mostly goat's milk cheese.
Yeah.
So are you still caught in that? I know that you guys buy a lot of nice, fresh sheep cheeses for the spring. And have you started to bring those in yet?
They're on a boat right now, but we'll see what sort of consistency and quality they have when they get here. But actually, the domestic buying has been great through the winter months.
It has.
Yeah, it's been really nice seeing these products come in through the Northeast and actually the South, and getting products that have those qualities that people look for to buy in the colder months, and being able to sell those while we're waiting for that traditional cusp of, you know, spring and summer.
The thaw,
waiting for the thaw.
You've still been able to get stuff. I mean, you deal with small logistics. Think in the Northeast, it's been brutal. People haven't been able to shovel out their cars or driveways still up where my family lives in New England. But have you had any problems getting the things down that you need domestically at all?
No, there's been a couple of days lag here and there. But really, we buy in good quantities and bring them in and put them in the caves and let them sort of, you know, rest in a natural environment. So yeah, it's been pretty okay, you know, as far as other pallet logistics that are concerned. That's another issue.
Yeah. Now, Ellen, you just recently moved to the city, and you're a cheesemonger. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself and where you come from and how you got to be here.
I have to talk. I thought I was gonna like come here to drink some whiskey and eat.
You can do both of those while you're talking. We do that. We've had several pantsless guests in here.
Pantsless. So I can go there then.
Yeah, whatever, wherever you need to go. Wherever you need to go, you can go there.
Yeah, I just moved here from San Francisco. Going to be working for a distributor out here.
Who are you going to work for?
For FMA.
Food Matters Again?
Food Matters Again.
And where were you coming from in San Francisco? Where, what business
Born
were you
and raised
in?
San Franciscan. I was working for World's Best Cheeses, formerly... Uh-huh. CWI, formerly Cheeseworks.
Sure, sure.
So in the same office that you inhabited for a wee bit there.
They fumigated that office a long time ago.
I heard they had to do that after
all
you left.
Traces of me should have been removed from that establishment. So what's
we listen to the show all the time in the office,
oh,
actually.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. And I'm glad you'll be able to listen to this one. And you know,
I don't know if I'm ever going to listen to this one.
Why would you not do that?
Oh, you know, just listening to yourself on the whatever.
Yeah, I have to.
Yes, you do. That's a part of your job.
So it's an interesting question I could ask you. So you you had a certain mentality of work in the cheese businesses on the West Coast, I feel like, very different than it is on the East Coast. So maybe you can just expand on that. And I know you've been here for a short time, but do you see the differences in the way things get done or the logistics or the way everything works on a wholesale level here as opposed to there?
Great question. Honest to God, Greg, I have no freaking clue as of this moment in time. But to revisit that question maybe in the next couple of months, for sure. I can tell, you know, talking to folks that work out here, it seems like it's going to be a wee bit different. But as of now, I've just kind of been hanging out for the last week. I haven't started work yet. Yeah. So first day is this week. So not quite sure, but I'm sure I'll have like a lot of good things to say about that difference. But you know, it's the East Coast versus the West Coast, man.
I do. Plenty of differences.
So.
Oh, man. Well, I'll probably switch towns sometime again. I might move further north.
Yeah. Whereabouts are you going to go, Mr. Blaze?
I think I might head to Boston after I get this radio show. I might just get in my car and just drive north and hit Boston, see who needs a cheesemonger up there. If anybody from Italy is listening to this show, you know,
I hear Rubiners is hiring.
Rubiners. Oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing. So what else you got going on, Nate? Are you going to plan to – you have any expository cheese events that you're going to be taking place in? I know you were a contestant in the Cheesemonger Invitational and placed quite well in that. Are you planning on re-entering in the ring?
I'm retired.
You've retired?
I've hung up the third place belt.
Second place belt, I hear.
Third place. I don't know.
Oh.
You know, I'd like to travel this spring and summer at some point to visit some producers, but Charlotte, one of the owners of the cheese shop, and I are working on a book, so that's...
Oh, that's awesome. What kind of book are you working on?
It's kind of an introduction to cheese that we were approached for, and so we're busy compiling information on that. So on top of running the two shops and doing that, you know, if I can cut away for a little bit to go see the green grass out there and see the animals in the fields, that would be awesome. But, those trips kind of come up on a whim too. You know, it's like 3 or 4 weeks out and all of a sudden you have to come up with money and figure out a way to...
That is the plight of the cheesemonger.
But it's great. So that's sort of the next few months for me.
I hear, you mentioned to me when I had seen you before that you were going to be judging in a cheese competition somewhere, were you not?
There's rumors of going to a tour again for Mundial, which Rudolf Le Meunier puts on.
Can you explain to us what that is? It's like a cheesemonger invitational from European side.
Yeah, international cheesemonger invitational, essentially, with a giant exposition of cheeses for people around the world. And there's classifications that you go through. It's like you're tasting cheese, and it's based on style, and you have to rank them and, you know, pass judgment.
Yeah, that's the best.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're an authority in it, and...
Well, you are at this point. You know what I mean? What did you notice and tour the event and tour you have attended before?
Yeah. The first one was 2 years ago this June. So they're doing it every 2 years.
That's great.
Yeah.
Maybe just as an aside, you can describe to us what are the differences between someone who competed in the Cheesemonger Invitational here and also witnessed another battle of cheesemongers. What was the biggest differences that you remember in the two competitions?
The stage was a lot bigger. There wasn't an auditorium.
Like physically?
Physically, yeah.
Were you more sober for one of these activities?
I'm always sober. the event and tour was, it seemed to, it was obviously an international community. I don't know, like we've had people compete in CMI that were from Canada and whatnot. There was a certain intensity about the event at Mundial that was real, and there's for sure that competitive spirit with the Cheesemonger Invitational here, but it seemed and maybe it was because it was in France.
Do you think that do you think that that has to do, you know, this just throwing it out there with the experience, or maybe even as a weird question, but like the age of the competitors?
Yeah, it could have been. It seemed like there were definitely some seasoned veterans in tour that were like decades into the industry, and the here, you know, like it, the concept of cheesemonger is relatively a young thing.
Uh-huh.
I feel
in America,
know, in America, and I think we're growing to create this culture that is going to be very refined. But you know, there are people here that in tour that were definitely, you know, that were working for Affineurs for, you know, two decades. You know, that came from a huge heritage where, like, you know, we're cheesemongers here. We're just sort of like,
we're punks.
Yeah, we're a little bit of roughnecks, you know. We love the food.
Yeah.
And we love the cheese. And we're very expressive of it. But, you know, it's only been probably like the last 15 years.
And it'll evolve into its own thing,
absolutely,
too. It's not just going to turn into exactly the same way that it's been. Mm-hmm. You know, in other countries, and
what
makes it special and different and special, quote unquote. But you know what I mean, like just. Mm-hmm.
But do you think the mellowing of your trade comes with age, or will we always just be the kind of people we are? So, a cheesemonger here that has 15-20 years worth of experience, will they grow into the same thing, you think?
I think you grow, but you don't necessarily grow into the same thing as something that somebody else has done.
Mm.
You know, so there's no way for us to tell insofar as this moment in time the way that it's going to develop. But it's going to develop into a distinctly American thing. It's never going to develop into a European thing.
But the cheeses are always going to be the thread of quality that runs through your trade, right?
Without a doubt, absolutely. And we have plenty of that.
So there'll be base elements, like fundamental elements, if I have to work with the products that will always stay the same.
Absolutely.
But maybe what you might be saying is the personalities of the individuals involved, or how we view and approach those fundamental tasks might change. And that's what I always like.
Yes,
when I work with folks who are more well established than that. It's kind of fun to be yourself, but yet still have the base knowledge where you are undeniably a professional and and solid at what you do, right? And
yeah.
That's an American thing.
Absolutely.
That's anybody that works in this industry, you know.
You think so?
I would hope so, and that's where, like, if we, you know, it's where we all should be coming from, right?
I would think so.
A mutual respect for the work that we do and the product that we sell and the people that make it and all of that stuff that matters.
Yeah, we got a healthy thing there. I actually, and, you know, we won't keep you. We'll let you get back to your pies and your cocktails soon, but one thing I was discussing I was, after I did the show a couple weeks ago, I went and I had a beer with Sam Frank, who's a great Affineur. You know, he came and was a cheesemaker in Italy and also in Vermont. And now he works for the Crown Finish Caves, which I really enjoy. And I went out and had a beer with him and then a friend of his, and we were talking about what matters, or what's the point of all of this? Because I find myself having that conversation more and more. And as I look at the world around me, I always think, the overtly hyperbolic as this might be, I always think, you know, we are these sort of weird sentinels that represent and try to save a way of life that is absolutely going away. For me, the way that we make food and the way that we deal with food is, to me, and I don't have statistics to back this up, but the way it feels to me is that it's becoming more mechanized and food is being, you know, placed into the control of less people. So I think the camaraderie, or what makes us all band together, is our collective need to fight against that. You know, would you
absolutely
agree there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a slow shift in the mentality of consumption and where we're getting our food products from. And it really takes, you know, I'd say at least a generation, maybe two, to completely shift away from, you know, just general consumption on you know, a mass produced level.
Need to eat it, need to eat it, need to buy.
Like, I need to go, I need, like, brand names, chain restaurants, all that stuff, you know, like, move away from that. But I think we are part of that movement that is pushing away, you know, and it's going to be our children and grandchildren that are actually going to impact that.
Yeah.
Does that mean we're not going to go get the mozzarella special at Applebee's tonight?
Oh, no, we're going to Chili's.
Those mozzie sticks are much better at Chili's, man. Better breading.
I'm just a California girl. I don't know.
Yeah, get your Jack-in-the-box mozzarella sticks out there.
The Jack-in-the-Crack.
Tacos.
Oh, yeah. No, well. No.
Well, look, I'm going to wrap this thing up here, but I want to say thank you guys for coming in on such short notice, and thank you, Mr. Guarini. Piero, we will hope to get you back on the line as soon as we possibly can. So this is Greg signing off for another episode of Cutting the Curd. We'll be back next week live on the Heritage Radio Network. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.